Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to a late episode of Mysteries of the Unexplained. My name is Will, and with me this week, as always, is the ravishing, wonderful Miss Universe 1985, 86 and 89, the wonderful Annie Gann. Annie Gann, how are you?
It was totally stole from me in 87. It absolutely stole from me, and I'm still sick over it. I tell you, that tiara was mine that year. The gown I had on was to die for, absolutely to die for.
But the judges did pick me, and that's what happened. So unfortunately, you can't win every year, Annie, can you? Sorry, I'm late this week, guys. It just seems to be the week that ran away with me, and therefore made me late.
Everything went a little bit wrong, didn't everything go a bit? Do you know one of those weeks that everything goes a little bit wrong? And now we have the big freeze, and it's absolutely freezing. And I'm actually sitting here in my jacket recording this.
Stove talk coming through here. I have the stove lit, and it's nice and toasty. I kind of love this weather. I love when it's like bitterly cold, but also a sunny, clear morning. That is top tier weather for me. Top tier.
Oh yeah. Well, I do love it too, but I was late home from work, hence the stove wasn't lit. Listen, we could go on about stoves for the entirety of this podcast, but do you know what would warm my cockles now? I hate that word, cockles. I know it just refers to shells, but I don't like it. But what would warm mine is a little story from you.
Perfect. Well, I've got a wonderful story here for you today, and let's get right into it. In December of 2005, true terror began to unfold in a seemingly mundane terraced house situated in the northeast town of South Shields, United Kingdom. The family, who experienced a bizarre chain of events, have remained anonymous to this day for fear that their peers and neighbours would ridicule them. They are known simply as Marianne, her partner Mark, and their three-year-old son Robert. One evening, the family returned home from a day out and started their regular nightly routine of trying to put Robert down for the night. Everything seemed normal in the home, but when Marianne entered the kitchen, she was greeted by their kitchen chairs, which were neatly stacked on top of one another on the kitchen table. Alarmed and quite perplexed, Marianne called out to Mark, asking him if he had stacked the chairs. But when Mark reached the kitchen, his expression said it all. Had they been burgled? Was there an intruder in the house? Mark, worried that his family was in danger, checked the entire house and finds nothing. The couple said that they were unsettled, but found comfort after ensuring that the house's doors and windows were secured, and tried to put whatever had happened to the back of their minds, presumably believing that the other was playing a prank on them that will be revealed in the morning. But the reveal never comes. Just going to stop there for 2 seconds. I wouldn't be able to sleep that night if the two of us were like, did you do that? You didn't do that. Okay, who did that? Right. So someone stacked the chairs when we were out, and right, I would be terrified. Would you not be terrified? Or what would you do in reality? Like if you came home and into your house there and it was you were Dave and that happened, what would you think? Like realistically, what would you be thinking?
Yeah, like I kind of get where he didn't freak out initially. I would just think that he had done it or he had gotten somebody else to do it maybe. Or I don't know, if you had family nearby, you'd be like, did somebody come in and clean the kitchen floor and take the chairs up out of the way as a nice present for us? And my initial feelings are cleaning ghost, and I wouldn't be adverse to one if any cleaning ghost is listening right now. Continue.
Yeah, it is giving the vibes of Mammy's mopping the floor and she's put the chairs on top of the table, isn't it?
Nice ghost. But I wouldn't freak out.
We'll continue.
I wouldn't freak out just yet, but somebody's messing with me. I wouldn't think ghost yet.
Yeah, yeah. We'll keep going down the road and see how we got on. Nothing unusual or strange happens for weeks, and after Christmas had passed, they had almost forgotten about the stacked chairs. It wouldn't be until mid-January that they would experience their subsequent encounter. One January afternoon, Marianne climbed the house stairs and found a chest of drawers resting on the landing. There are a few terrifying facts about this incident. Number one, the chest of drawers were heavy. To move it, you would need a minimum of two people. Number two, Marianne said that she was alone in the house. And thirdly, she didn't hear it being dragged across the floor. She spent the rest of the afternoon downstairs in the sitting room, terrified. Finally, Mark comes home and sees Marianne is wild-eyed and has a story to tell. He stands listening to her, frantically telling him about a chest of drawers on the landing, when suddenly a gust of wind the couple claims could not have come from an open door or window rushes past them, forcing the sitting room door to slam shut. Later that night, as the couple got ready for bed, they noticed that their bedroom was unusually cold. Just as Marianne drifted off to sleep, she was woken up by an object hitting her head. It was a stuffed toy dog belonging to Robert. Upright, staring into the darkness of their bedroom, she said as she looked around the room, she was struck by another soft toy that hit her in the forehead. Suddenly, toys were hitting the couple from every angle at fantastic force. The couple says that they hid underneath the bed covers but felt a hand grab the blankets and pull them in a forceful direction off the bed. Now that particular sentence did fucking terrify me.
I am gone. I am out of that house. I am fucking out the door. Take the child, or if he's throwing a tantrum, leave him there. Fucking get out of there. I'd be on every listing. I'd be on fucking newhome.ie. Get me the fuck out of here. A fucking hand. I'm sorry. And I would actually, no, I'd be dead in the bed. I wouldn't even have to. They'd be taking me out in a coffin. I can't.
Well, things are about to fucking go up a gear. Then Mark shouted in agony, "Ah, Marianne!" His body was burning, he said. Later, Mark described the sensation as being scratched by a large, heavy claw. As the side light was turned on, it was revealed that Mark's back was covered in scratches, 13 in total. Soon after that, the attack stopped as suddenly as it began. Oddly, the scratches are said to have completely disappeared by the following morning. From there, the strange entity seems to become obsessed with using children's toys to frighten and panic the family. One time, the family found their son's rocking horse hanging by its reins from the ceiling loft hatch. And on another occasion, the family was met by the creepy sight of a toy bunny sitting at the top of the stairs with a box cutter placed in its paws. No one could figure out who had placed these toys in such a way. Toys would often roll across the floor on their own without warning, make eerie moaning noises, or turn themselves on. Another weird occurrence was when a sink in the bathroom allegedly suddenly seemed to fill with blood to the point of overflowing, which vanished soon after. At this point, the couple believed that they were dealing with a poltergeist. One disturbingly menacing habit that this particular poltergeist had was leaving threatening messages on their son Robert's magnetic doodle board. These messages were typically ominous, aggressive, and peppered with profanity, saying things like, "You're dead. Just go now. Die, bitch. R.I.P. And my personal favourite, "Go, bitch, now to your mam."
I this is making me laugh. I don't know what. Oh God, I don't know why. Now, do you know, like, you know what did come into my head there now? If you weren't going to be of the, if you weren't going to initially like think that this was paranormal or whatever, you know, and you weren't a believer, say, in any of that shit, I would think that there is like a man, I don't know why it's a man, could be a lady, like living in a hidden compartment in my house that was like popping out and doing all this stuff and then being like, and then running back in. Like I would, I'd be like, there's somebody in the walls.
Yeah, I agree with you. At this point in the story, I kind of thought, you know, maybe it was, say, if Marianne, if it was all directed at Marianne, that Mark was doing this and he secretly hated her or something. But then I went on through the story and then it got like kind of weirder, and you'll soon find out. These messages would graduate from the board to emails and SMS messages that Marianne would receive on her mobile phone, which were typically death threats or promises of violence, such as "get you bitch" and "die now." One such message says, I don't know why I'm laughing,
this
but
goes,
it's like it's something that I would do to you, like joking when we lived together.
Yeah, joking.
Which is,
yeah,
says a lot
I
about
never
me.
Found the name of that person who was sent out. This is a tech ghost. This is the Elon Musk of poltergeist. I have never, in all our paranormal research, which has been thorough and extensive through the years, heard of a ghost sending you a text message saying "die, bitch." This is just geared up to a level. This is a first for me.
Yeah, very advanced, very advanced. This isn't, we're not dealing with some Victorian child ghost. We're dealing with somebody who died, obviously, in 2004 and was like raging and were up on the technology. I presume they were a teenager. They know what to do. Like, we're two steps away here from saying, like, using the two instead of T-O,
yeah.
You know? One such message said, imagine this, like you're already dealing with a screaming 3-year-old, your husband's off to work. Once this message that said, "going to die today, going to get you." And another read, "I can get you when you awake and I'll come for you when you asleep, bitch."
This ghost is so rude.
Sassy.
This does sound like messages that... Are you just reading some of our WhatsApp threads? Because this stuff sounds very familiar.
I'm just reading some of our reviews. And the funny thing... Well, not the funny... The terrifying thing about it is that none of the messages could be tracked or traced to a number or an email account, which they apparently rang the telephone company about and their provider, and they couldn't find who the source of the text messages were coming from, and they seemed to come from nowhere. Marianne's cell phone would also be incessantly called by her home phone, even when she knew there was no one else at home. Other frightening incidences revolved around the young son, Robert. One time the couple found their son in another room on the floor, tightly cocooned in a blanket and with a plastic table perched on top of him as if it had been carefully balanced there. The boy was described as being in a sort of trance with his eyes staring blankly at nothing at all. Another time the couple claims that Robert went missing and that they desperately searched the house only to find him stuffed into a small closet tightly bound by his blanket. This could have been just a normal acting up of a young boy, but the couple were convinced that this was the work of a malevolent entity inhabiting their home. All of these incidences prompted the terrified Mark and Marianne to call in someone to investigate, and soon after would arrive the paranormal researchers Mike Hollowell and Darren Ritson. For their part, at first, Hollowell and Ritson were not particularly convinced by their frantic story told by the family and their wild claims. Such intensely pronounced violent poltergeist behaviour is actually quite rare, and the claims just seemed to be too much. Nevertheless, they went into the home and set up their equipment, which included motion-activated video cameras, sensors and other sophisticated gear. At this point, they did not expect much to come of it, but they would soon see that they were very wrong indeed. Whatever sinister presence was residing in the house seems to have been rather perturbed by them being there, as it began to escalate its ghostly activity, quite often in full view of the amazed investigators. Toys began to move around, make inexplicable noises, or even talk. Disembodied voices emanated from an old baby monitor. Their gear was often turned off or even broken by an unseen force. On one occasion, even knives were lobbed at them by unseen hands. The investigators also witnessed doors open and slam closed, objects levitating, blankets on beds sliding off, lampshades swinging, strange messages appearing on their son's board or on pieces of paper, and various household items or furniture impossibly balancing at strange angles. Now, what they're referring to with the impossibly balancing at strange angles is actually just a bottle, as far as I am aware. I think it was like a bottle of like Coke or like some soda a drink just balancing like at a weird angle. So listen, pinch of salt. Some of these phenomena were successfully captured on film. Perhaps the most bizarre and frightening event the two investigators witnessed was an entity in the son's bedroom. One evening, Hollowell and Ritson claimed that they saw a large dark shape appear on the balcony and skulk around outside of Robert's room. Marianne, who was with the investigators at the time, also saw the apparition and let out a startled shriek. The entity then proceeded to walk right through the room in front of them. Hollowell described the creepy encounter. The entity walked slowly from the bathroom across the landing into the bedroom. As it passed the door to Robert's room, it paused and stared icily at me. Its face, devoid of all features such as eyes, nose and mouth, was cold and menacing. It felt like it was burrowing into your soul. It was large, maybe 2 meters in height, and midnight black. It was a three-dimensional silhouette that just radiated sheer evil. Unfortunately, although a camera had been set up in the room, the investigators were too shocked and stunned by the appearance of the entity to think to turn it on. Numpty numpty. Hollowell would later lament this, saying, "It was gutting. We all saw it, but we didn't get any proof." The investigators would get a look at the phantom menace in action again when it began to show a rather violent tendency to attack Mark. Just a few days after encountering the apparition in Robert's bedroom, they watched in horror as it approached Mark and attacked him. During the encounter, everyone present could clearly see large, wicked scratch marks as if from talons form on Mark's back. An amazed Hollowell said of the strange incident, "First, an elongated red patch, then sharply defined scratches within it. Cuts have started to appear on the right-hand side of his back. They immediately bled. Then Mark's skin started to change colour. It went dark as if it was sunburnt. I've seen film and stills of poltergeist scratches appearing before, but nothing like this." The investigators claim that this time they caught the whole brutal encounter on tape, and although the video is quite grainy, scratches can allegedly be seen to be appearing on Mark. Several other attacks were witnessed, always targeting Mark, sometimes leaving bruises or welts, and at other times scratches, all of which faded soon after. Then, just as suddenly as the poltergeist activity had started, one day it all abruptly ceased, and no more phenomena occurred anywhere in the house. All had gone quiet. In the end, the disturbances and various strange phenomena caused by what has come to be known as the South Shields poltergeist were witnessed by dozens of witnesses, including family, friends and paranormal investigators. Hollowell and Ritson would soon go on to write a whole book on the incident called The South Shields Poltergeist, One Family's Fight Against an Invisible Intruder, and they remain adamant that everything described really happened, and that this is an authentic haunting of an intensity and magnitude rarely seen. They have gone so far as to call it a Premier League poltergeist haunting. For their part though, although there have been no more incidences since, Mark and Marianne remain traumatised by the whole ordeal, and Marianne has said, "We were absolutely terrified. I don't think I'll ever be the same again. If I hear a noise that I cannot explain or something goes missing, then it makes me wonder whether it has come back again. But right now we are just glad that it seems to have left us alone. We found out that its name was Annie Gann." She was a horrible housemate to have.
Will, did they stay living in that house?
They did stay living in that house. Now, like, listen, you could turn around and say, like, yeah, was this all just made up for them to write a book? I don't know. Maybe it is, like, all a big elaborate prank or hoax or whatever. But those investigators have denied this, and they've said that Marianne had seemingly had genuinely terrified them, and that there was no particular way that phenomena that they had witnessed could not or could have been faked, right?
Yeah.
They did say that they were kind of a bit suspicious of Mark at first, because he didn't seem to react like that strongly to the weird things that were going on in the house.
Yeah.
And he seemed like someone that might be playing a prank, so maybe he had a bit of a sense of humour. They soon kind of ruled that out when he got scratches on his back and stuff, and things got a bit crazy. So yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just a very, 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 very weird story. It's very weird.
I suppose because it was so extreme, and it seemed to like not just start slowly. Well, okay, maybe with the chairs, but then it just like ramped up to a huge degree, like straight away. Mm-hmm. Like, I suppose the first thing you would think if it wasn't genuinely somebody playing a trick, well, no, like the sink of blood and stuff like that, like that can't be. I mean, how could you make that happen? So then you're thinking, okay,
yeah,
it's not actually somebody else doing something to them, somebody who has a grudge or something like that, or a man living in the walls. And then I suppose the next logical thing is like that they did make it up. But in any of these cases, you've always got to look at like, did they gain anything from it? Like, they didn't write a book about it. The investigators did. Was it a ruse with the investigators that they would like make a book about it and split the profits? I don't know from a book like that whether you're ever going to get rich from it. It just seems like whenever you think about these things being a hoax, because it's so incredible to think that it could be anything other than a hoax, you've always got to think, but why would they do it? Like, why, what would be there? And if they were going to make it a hoax, then why would they if it were to be a hoax, then why would they stop it so suddenly? Why would they say no, it's all gone away, and just keep on living in that house? I can tell you one thing though, if it genuinely did happen, and I know, like, okay, ghosts don't have a postcode, so, you know, you could move, like, a few blocks down and they might just come with you, whatever, but there's no way I could ever fucking stay in that house. Jesus, when the microwave, like, pinged, I'd be dead. I'd be absolutely dead. No, couldn't do it.
I think for me, and I think you're the same, is the invisible hand grabbing the blankets off the bed would send me into a psychosis that I would never recover from.
Oh, I'd be in a hospital for the rest of my life. That's it. Bye bye. Annie's gone. I don't know. I'm always amazed, like, if this did happen to people, how they're ever okay afterwards. If you think that something, and the really creepy thing about this was like all the kids' toys and like the bunny with the box cutter and your child being wrapped up in a blanket. Then I was thinking, maybe the child is, this is terrible, it's like maybe the child is a demon. Maybe they had like a demon child and he was doing it. And then he just turned 4 and then he was like, no, everything's okay now. Grant.
Who, little Robert?
Little Robert.
Little Robert is a little angel.
Little Robert's a little shit.
Yeah, he's a little shit. Anyway, if you want to read more about the story or find out all the juicy details, I would thoroughly recommend The Sound Shield's Poltergeist: One Family's Fight Against Invisible Intruder by the two gentlemen that are said to have investigated this whole incident. It's a fantastic story, whether it's real or not. Marianne, if you're listening, Mark, if you're listening, come forth. We would love to chat to you. We would love for you to come on our little indie podcast and choose us out of all the big Premier League podcasts, just little old F-minus podcast, paranormal podcasts in the background here. We would like to be the ones to interview
choose
you.
Choose us. I am going to spend the rest of the night sending anonymous threatening text messages to people that I know in my contacts list. I think it might be a great story.
And they'll just bang your name into WhatsApp, and then your profile picture will come up, and it'll be all, you know, it'll be over immediately. It'll be over immediately.
I'm not a very
anyway,
good poultry
thank you.
Guys.
Oh. No, I don't think you'd have that torture. I'll be getting messages and be like, yeah, I'm going to get you, bitch. And I'd be like, Annie, you're in my contacts. You're in my fucking contacts. You'd be too lazy. You wouldn't even go and buy a new fucking SIM card to show on your phone. You'd be like, fuck it. Listen, thank you for listening, Annie. Thank you. Thank you for lending an ear to this story for me to tell it to you.
Thanks so much. I feel so much better after that now. I'm just going to go buy a burner phone.
I know,
okay,
you do.
Bye.
I know
you do. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. You can support the podcast by joining the Patreon if you so wish, or giving us a wonderful review. It helps the algorithm find us and make us more seen, or whatever the fucking expression is. Thanks for listening, and we will be back next week. Annie will be back with a ravishing story, I'm sure. And in the meantime, stay safe. Don't let the bed bugs bite. Don't let any hands come in and grab the blankets off your bed. And yeah, do you have any last words, Annie?
Do the outro.
What? Join us next time for another mystery of the unexplained.
Explain. You did it, you big fucking pick, you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.